The capital of the United States, December 8, 1941. Today, the Congress of the United States convenes in a solemn joint session, a session that will hear the President of the United States deliver his message that will ask for a declaration of war with Japan. The House chamber, always looking small and overcrowded, has today attained a dignity that overcomes even the gray girders that temporarily support the glass roof of the chamber. The galleries started filling early this morning and, of course, are now packed. To witness this historic occasion are most of the dignitaries and officials of the Capitol. At 12 o'clock, the Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, called the House to order after a brief prayer by the chaplain of the House, Dr. James Sherrill Montgomery. The House passed the resolution which provided for the joint session, and then recessed until the call of the chair, which is expected shortly before 12:30. While we wait for the members of the Senate, the members of the Cabinet, and the Supreme Court, we have here with us Columbia's Washington News analyst, Mr. Albert Warner, who will speak at this time. Mr. Warner.
Representative Sam Rayburn, Speaker of the House of Representatives, has just called the House into session again. There was a brief session beginning at 12 o'clock, which lasted for 4 minutes. During that time, a prayer was offered by Dr. Sherrill Montgomery, the chaplain of the House. In that prayer, the chaplain spoke of the crimson threads of sacrifice which lie ahead. He spoke of national unity and honor and integrity. A resolution was offered at that time by Representative McCormick, the majority leader, which allowed the suspension of rules during the rest of the day. Then a motion was in order to recess. That recess has now ended, and the Speaker has again wielded the gavel, calling the House into session at 12:30. A special joint session of the two chambers, House and Senate, will begin, and the President of the United States will be heard addressing Congress, asking for the declaration of the existence of a state of war. Congress is poised to give that declaration. There's no doubt about the sentiment of Congress. You can hear it from House and Senate members on every side. All differences have been laid aside. Representative Martin, who is the chairman of the Republican National Committee and also the minority leader of the House, has said he is ready to follow the president's lead. Isolationists like Senator Wheeler and Representative Hamilton Fish have followed in Mr. Martin's course and have promised to go along under the president's leadership. When the joint session is held at 12:30, the cabinet members, you can already begin to see some of them in the lobbies here, will be grouped right in front of the rostrum where Vice President Wallace will preside with Speaker Rayburn. Right behind the cabinet members and Supreme Court justices will be the senators, and then the House members in their regular benches. At one side of the rostrum, you may already see in uniform the heads of the armed services. There is Admiral Stark, Chief of Naval Operations. There is General Marshall, Army Chief of Staff, and General Holcomb, Chief of the Marine Corps. After the President has been heard, each chamber will assemble separately, and later in the afternoon, the war resolution will come out of committee for action. Now, here is the text of one resolution which Senator Connally has already prepared. Senator Connally will introduce the resolution in the Senate and Representative McCormick in the House. Connally's resolution reads as follows: declaring that a state of war exists between the Imperial Japanese government and the government and the people of the United States, and making provision to prosecute the same. Whereas the Imperial Japanese government has committed unprovoked acts of war against the government and the people of the United States of America, therefore be it resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, that the state of war between the United States and the Imperial Japanese government, which has thus been thrust upon the United States, is hereby formally declared, and the President is hereby authorized and directed to employ the entire naval and military forces of the United States and the resources of the government to carry on war against the Imperial Japanese government, and to bring the conflict to a successful termination. All of the resources of the country are hereby pledged by the Congress of the United States. Now here's Park Simmons.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. Presiding at the joint session, of course, is Representative Sam Rayburn, Speaker of the House, and Vice President of the United States, Henry A. Wallace. The Speaker will present the President And we understand that we're not quite ready to go to the speaker's platform as yet. The Supreme Court at this time, I believe, is walking into the chamber. And the cabinet is also coming in at this time. And so after they come in, the President of the United States will arrive. And at that time, we intend to turn you over to the speaker's platform. However, before we do that, here is the history of that fateful Sunday yesterday, which brings this joint session today. At 9:30 a.m., Secretary of State Cordell Hull arrived at his desk. At 10 a.m., Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox and Secretary of War Henry L. Stimson entered Hull's office. At 1 p.m., Knox and Stimson left. Japanese Ambassador Nomura telephoned Hull asking for an appointment at 1:45, and at 1:30 p.m., reporters, photographers, and newsreel men advised to be present for something big, and that was the story of that fateful Sunday of yesterday. Beginning at 9:30 a.m. were the important developments and ending approximately at 1:30 p.m. At 1:35 p.m., more State Department officials arrived, and then Under Secretary of State Sumner Welles was with them. At 1:35 p.m., there were more State Department officials arriving, among them Under Secretary of State Sumner Welles, and at 2 p.m., the Chinese ambassador, Dr. Hu Shi, was shown into Hull's office. At approximately 2:05, now these events were occurring rather rapidly, at approximately 2:05 p.m., Nomura and Special Envoy Saburo Kurusu arrived 20 minutes late and were cooled off for 15 minutes in the anteroom of Hull's office. At 2:15 p.m., President Roosevelt was advised of the Hawaii bombing. At 2:30 p.m., the Chinese ambassador left Hull's office and the Japanese diplomats were shown in. At 2:22 p.m. yesterday afternoon, Early advised the press associations, that's Mr. Stephen Early, who advised the press associations of President Roosevelt's telephone conversation. The president is arriving right now, accompanied by his escorting party from the House. He's coming in rather slowly. There are officials of the Army and Navy with him, many of them in uniform. As today, the Army and Navy was ordered into uniform. They're moving rather slowly now. There is a number of policemen to his rear, several other distinguished gentlemen following him, other policemen coming through now, and the president is moving into the House. We're going to move our microphone to a point more advantageous and see if we can give you more of a description of the president moving into the House of Representatives. We see that right at this moment there is no business at hand at the speaker's platform as we had presumed to be. And so we will continue from this point. The House is very crowded. Immediately outside of the door from which we're looking at the House floor, we can see that the members of the House of Representatives, as well as the senators, the Supreme Court, and the Cabinet, have thoroughly crowded the House floor. Just outside the door, the people are very thickly crowded between our door and the rail at which we watch the proceedings on the outside. And I believe Mr. Warner is here again, and I think that he has the prayer which was read earlier by the chaplain. Is that right, Mr. Warner? Right. Now here's Columbia's Washington News analyst, Mr. Albert Warner.
At the present moment, Vice President Wallace and Speaker Rabin are sitting down on the rostrum waiting for the arrival of the president. Dr. Cheryl Montgomery, the chaplain of the House, opening the first preliminary session of the House at 12 o'clock this morning, offered a prayer as follows. Eternal Father, strong to save, to thee we lift our prayer of steadfast hope and faith while the calendar of history is being stained with pagan cruelty and deceit. We pray for life-giving calmness, majestic and invincible. If we are to suffer as a noble people acquainted with grief and sorrow, O grant they may be heaven's challenge, turn us more devoutly to the blessings of the Spirit. O thou, Christ God, in the deeper processes of our nation's soul, hold us steadfastly to the realization that the richest garments of a country's character are often sewed with the crimson threads of sacrifice and suffering. Keep us free from passion and hate, and bless our land with the enduring prizes of national unity, honor, and integrity. Here's Park Simmons.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. In the escorting committee, which is left to escort the president in, there is Majority Leader Joseph Martin, Senator Carter Glass of Virginia. Rather, that's Minority Leader Joseph Martin, Majority Leader of the House. Also, Representative John McCormick, who is the Majority Leader of the House. The committee is coming in at this time, and I believe the president is arriving. Mr. Warner, do you see him at that point now?
The president is already in the building, but has not yet appeared in the House chamber. He has gone up Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol amid Washington streets, which have already changed their appearance. You see uniforms on every side. Army and Navy men attached to the Army and Navy, War and Navy departments who were in civilian clothes are now in uniform. There are guards in steel helmets in front of the Navy and War buildings. Traffic has been blocked from the two streets on each side of the White House, and no one can enter the White House grounds without being thoroughly identified.
The president, I believe, will be coming in just a few moments. The official party has passed the point at which we were observing just a moment ago, and the president has moved around to the rear of the house near the speaker's platform, the entrance from which he will arrive. The official party hasn't entered the doors near the speaker's platform at this time just yet, and we're walking out into the house floor, waiting for his arrival, and from that point we shall attempt to bring you a brief description of his arrival and those coming in with him. Applause, of course, is for the president, and he is now on the speaker's platform, walking up to the battery of microphones near Speaker Sam Rayburn. On his left is the House mace, which is always placed on its marble stand when the speaker is on the platform and presiding. President Roosevelt is now in front of the battery of the microphones, and we take you to the speaker's platform.
Senators and representatives, I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense, but always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. That I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this short period of time, this floor is wild. The short period of time the presidential address is completely over, a total of not more than 500 words at the most. Mr. Roosevelt is leaving the rostrum now on the arm of Captain James Roosevelt, followed by his bodyguard, Walters, and Chief of the Secret Service, Starling. He's leaving now. Going at the door into the cloakroom, and the assembled members of the two houses of Congress remain standing, applauding as he leaves.
To leave the house will recess. At this time, the president is going out of the gallery now, and there's some business going on at the platform at this time, and so for the conclusion of the ceremonies taking place at this time, we shall return you now to the platform. See now that the joint session of Congress, the House and the Senate, including the cabinet members and the Supreme Court, has concluded, and so thus we are going to conclude our broadcast at this point.